Ann Carrick here in for Paul Pastelli, and with me now for this hour is Bobby Ramos. How are you?
I'm cool in the gang. Thank you very much for having me.
It's been a
my
long
twin,
time.
My
huh?
twin.
I know, we're twins, babe. Woohoo! High five.
There you go. Yeah, I was telling your board up in Eric, which I really shouldn't have talked to him. I started to walk out when I saw he had a Cleveland Browns shirt on. I started to walk out, but I told him that you and I were twins because we share the same birthday.
Right.
You know?
So yeah. And I've found over
How's
years
mom doing?
I have a lot of twins.
Yeah, they go.
All of a sudden I'm like, wow, yeah. Mom.
I never own up to Charles Barkley shares our birthday.
No, you.
But my mother's.
You kind of just let that one out of the bag.
Yes, I did.
I know.
But my mother's favorite, I always own up to. She was a big fan of Sidney Poitier.
Oh.
He shares our birthday.
Okay.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of good people share our birthday.
Hello.
You know.
Hello.
Including the two of us.
There you go.
So. Yeah, but I asked you to come in because I thought of you. There were several topics, and I'm like, you know, I think Bobby's the one who can like handle these topics with
okay,
me.
Okay, no problem.
So I feel like it's like rapid fire.
Shoot! Wait, I'm a cop. Don't say that.
Don't shoot.
No, don't shoot.
Right.
Don't shoot.
Well, you know, I touched on it earlier because somebody called in, and that was the whole controversy with the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, wow, you know, you have somebody in the outfield with, you know, watching the catcher's signals and then relaying them to somebody in the dugout who's pounding on a garbage can to let the batter know which kind of pitch is coming, and then to find out that, you know, one of the people involved is now with the Red Sox. And so I was like, oh, this is gonna be ugly. It's just gonna spread, you know, all over.
They would have been better suited to use smoke signals, you know, sitting there banging on a garbage can. And what's bad for baseball is that the Astros won the World Series.
Right.
While they were cheating.
Yes.
You know, and people are making a big deal. Oh, well, they're losing two draft picks, the first and second round, for the next 2 years. And they got fined $5 million. Listen, man.
They won the World Series.
Right.
And perhaps because they were cheating.
Right.
Who knows? But
$5 million is a lot to us.
It's nothing
to a major league.
Nothing.
They're playing a third string shortstop, $5 million, who plays as much as you and I do.
So I could sit on the bench and earn $5 million, too.
Exactly.
I'll sign up for that job.
Yeah, me too. So that's just ridiculous. But
yeah.
It's such a stain on baseball. They had to do something, but it obviously wasn't enough. They very smartly, I think, didn't go after the players because there's too many players involved. And there are players now who were on that team who are on other teams now.
Yeah.
So they'd be hurting the new team that they're on.
Right.
So they just went after management. And they suspended the general manager and the coach for a year, and then they got fired an hour later.
Yeah.
And
it's unlikely it was the players who came up with the idea either.
They participated in making it better. And that's the kick
with the guy
who used to play for Houston, played with the Mets, Carlos Beltran, who's now the Mets manager. He was one of the guys who spoke up about it would be better for us to do it this way with banging on the can. He's now the manager of the Mets.
Yeah.
Okay, he was on that Houston team. So it's interesting. And he's the only player's name who's in the report. He is the only player that is all through that report. How they didn't do something with him, I don't know. But the Red Sox manager, Alex Cora, he's in hot stuff because he was on the Houston bench in those days.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox right now, as we speak, are being investigated, and he's their manager.
And that's exactly what the caller earlier was talking about. You know, so now it's like a repeat offender, you know?
Yeah, they have
And who
to go
knows
after
what
him.
Else?
Yeah.
You know, when you see the person's done something, you know, twice and on two different teams or something, you know, it's like, well, is there a string of bad behavior behind that?
They're doing what all major league teams do because they're trying to save face. They're trying to put a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, okay? Just for face value for the public. They know that a lot of teams are doing this kind of stuff. With everything that's going on now with surveillance and high-tech cameras, these cameras were in the outfield.
Yeah.
Picking up the catcher's fingers 9 miles away.
And people wonder why when you watch a game on TV, like football or something, they're always talking.
Covering their mouth now.
You know, because they know people are reading lips
reading
and doing
lips.
All this other stuff.
So that's just the world of sports and technology now.
Yeah.
This is where we're at. I don't know how much they can implement things as they go along, as problems happen. But as you know, there's always a way to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And that's what these teams are going to do.
It's always so disappointing when you have any kind of sports where there's a scandal, whether it's the doping from cycling or cheating on baseball, you know, because on the one hand, yeah, okay, I realize the cycling was not professional sport, but but you know, on the one hand, it's a sport and it's entertainment, but you want to think that you're actually watching great athletes compete against each other. And I know it's a business, but you know, nobody wants like all this underhanded cheating, you know. And what a horrible example, since sports is something that children participate in so much. And that's what we said. I get it. This is a professional team. It's a business. But kids don't know
anytime
that. They
you
just
get
think
big
it's a
business,
sport.
You get big problems.
Yeah.
And it's always going on. You know, for all the steroids problems that were going on in the 90s, and that's what's going to happen now with baseball. Everybody's going to look at the Astros as cheaters. And are their records going to be tainted? You know, Altuve won Rookie of the Year and all these awards. Well, he cheated.
Oh, I know.
So all of that stuff is going to kind of come up, but it's
Would they take away the title?
No, they are not taking away any titles.
Like
just
a series title.
Just like with Barry Bonds breaking Hank Aaron's record. They can't do that because they don't want to open Pandora's box, to be honest about it.
Then you're like rewriting history all directions.
But you know what? It's always happened. And I've talked to a lot of great Hall of Fame baseball players who I've asked, if you were around during the steroids era, do you think a lot of them have said, yeah, I would have.
Oh, they would have done the steroids.
They would have done it because you want to get to that next level, or if you're at the top level, you know there's always somebody trying to take your job.
Yeah.
You want to stay at that level.
Even if they knew there were health detrimental health effects.
The male ego is bigger than their brain most of the time.
Okay.
when you're talking about guys making $25 million a year, they see it as a no-brainer.
Yeah,
when you put in,
they figure it's worth the health risk because
exactly.
to keep the money going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but you know, even in the '70s, guys were taking a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Speed was a whole big thing in baseball. They have them in the clubhouse, and they were in the clubhouse in bowls like they were M&Ms, Flintstone tablets. You know, that was to keep them up because they were traveling so much.
Yeah.
Amphetamines.
You know, but the cheating filters all the way down. I remember several years back, I used to do some substitute teaching and. I was helping out with a field day at an elementary school.
Okay.
So we're elementary school, right?
Gotcha.
So we're talking
about
kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third graders. And, of course, a lot of parents there for field day to help, you know, whatever. And I'm explaining the rules or whatever. And as, like, the race, like a relay race or obstacle course or something, the parents are encouraging the children to cheat in order to win the race. And they're, like, in first or second grade. And I'm thinking, like, what are you doing? It's field day.
Right.
You know, and what are you teaching them?
And they're kids.
By encouraging them to cheat. And the kids don't, you know, they may, I don't know if they knew right, wrong, whatever. But I was like, it's the parents who were trying to. They were like, forget that. You don't have to go around that one. Just go, it doesn't matter if you dropped it. Just keep. I'm like, it matters.
Yeah, it matters.
It matters. They're
get
out.
That ribbon. Get that ribbon. And fast forward to last year with the actors and actresses who were paying money for their kids to get into better schools.
Yeah.
Fast forward to that. It's really basically the same thing.
Right.
It's really basic. That's the society that we're in now. It's a tough look. It really is a tough look. It's very hard. I was a DARE officer for 10 years. It's very hard to try to teach the kids, listen, straight line, do it the right way. It takes longer because these kids, you know, they want everything quick. It takes longer, but it's better for you in the long run. It's a tough sell, and you really have to preach it.
I've heard from experts over and over recently is that they group millennials, but that they want things instantly.
Right.
They want to wait for anything. Ann Carrick in today. Bobby Ramos in studio with me. We're talking about several topics. We were talking about lying and cheating and stealing, sort of, you know.
Right.
But let's switch and go the other direction a little bit. You know, I thought of you because it keeps coming up repeatedly. We haven't solved it yet. The police bias when it comes to arresting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know since you have been a police officer.
27 years.
Just a couple of years.
Yeah, here and there.
A few months, you know. You know, so I'm wondering from your perspective, having been on the force, are we at least making some progress on this whole topic? Because because a lot of times from my perspective, like in the news, I feel like we're making progress and then there'll be an incident and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like we haven't moved forward at all.
Yeah.
You know,
you're specifically, let me fine tune what you're saying. You're talking about police brutality versus people of color.
Brutality or also just the... that people of color seem to be considered suspects with less less facts, I'll say, or, you know.
I'm very direct. There is no seem to be. They are.
Well,
we are.
I'm not on the police force, so.
Right. You wouldn't. You know. But
my point is, you know, when I do the news, it's, you know, the other words, and you read the facts, you know, that a person of color is sort of presumed a suspect mm-hmm. with less facts right. than somebody who's not of color. You know, if that person was white with the same circumstances, they might question them, but they're right. not necessarily considered a suspect immediately. They're not taken into custody. And then the brutality part is, you know, that's different, but right. another problem that
right.
that doesn't seem to be going away fast enough either.
Listen, as when I was a police officer out of uniform, I got red tagged.
Meaning, okay. for the rest of us, red tagged.
You know, as far as walking, getting ready to get onto an elevator and a woman gets off.
Oh,
or
okay.
you're walking by in the parking lot of the cars and people slam the locks and make sure that they lock the door as you walk by. Yeah, I've always kind of found it funny because I was a cop. And if something were to happen to you, I was going to be the one to help save you.
You were going to be the one who's
yeah.
helping, right?
And you know,
but you weren't in uniform. They didn't
right,
know that. And so
right,
all
know?
Of a sudden
so
they're not sure.
I always
sure.
find that funny. Yeah, yeah. I always find that kind of funny. It's sad, though. But no, to answer your question, no, I don't think we've progressed hardly at all. Because the bottom line is this. You don't have to be a police officer. And I'm brutally honest with this kind of stuff, Ann. You don't have to be a police officer, like you said, when you read the papers, you see on the news, these situation happens where a cop is shooting somebody in the back as they're walking away or running away or something where you know that they shouldn't have been shot. They're sitting in a car.
Right.
You don't have to be a cop to notice that when that happens, Ann, the person doesn't look like you who got shot.
Right. I mean, there's a few cases where it has been. There was the woman who called.
Extremely. Three or four E's in few.
Well, and what I was going to say is they make the news. Like the woman who called police because she thought there was an intruder.
Right.
They showed up at her house. She goes to the car and for some reason, the officer in the passenger side doesn't realize it's the person who called or whatever and shoots her like through the window.
Happens a lot.
Right.
It happens.
But
a
that
lot.
White female,
right.
everybody's heard that story.
Right. Right.
And my guess is it's happened countless times. Mm. So some a person of color, probably particularly male person of
yeah.
color, and we don't hear about them at all.
Right. For every, it's like radio numbers where they say for every one call you get, you have 100 other people who want to call who don't call in. Or for every person who writes a letter,
right?
They say there's a huge number of people who would like to write a letter.
We're thinking the
letter,
same thing, but
just don't.
Just didn't say anything,
just don't.
Right?
Yeah. No, it happens. It happens quite a bit. My pet peeve with the whole thing is people throw out that caveat of training. Oh, training will make officers need to be trained. Has zilch to do with it. Has zilch to do with it. That's just an excuse. Just like it's an excuse that no matter what the situation, when a police officer messes up, most cops are good people. The ones who mess up always say, I was in fear of my life. Every single time.
Are you saying that they're using that sort of as an excuse?
Of course they are.
Oh, okay.
Of course. It's a,
is that,
it's
that's
a
like
defense.
The secret code for,
yeah, yeah.
like, I did something I'm not supposed to, if, so I'm going to say I was in fear of my life.
If that's the case, then you should have got a job at Wendy's. Okay? Don't, you can't.
Nothing against Wendy's, by the
no,
way. I love
no,
Wendy's.
No, me too. But no, but the bottom line is, if you're going to be scared every time you see a blue car, you're going to get nervous anytime you're in this situation and shoot somebody, you shouldn't be in that position. You
right.
shouldn't be in that job, okay?
But I'm sure there are times where the person's life, the ones who didn't screw up.
There are.
That, you know,
there
where,
are.
It, I mean.
Listen, if any cop tells you, like I said, I did it 27 years. I'm the most
right.
decorated cop in Stratford's history. I was in a lot of situations. If a cop, including me, if a cop ever tells you that they were never afraid, they're either lying or they're crazy.
Right.
Okay? That's just human nature 101. But when
so
I...
What,
when
so
I,
what I'm going to say, what you're saying, though, is so when somebody is using that as the excuse, like I was in fear for my life and that's why I acted this way, yeah. you're saying that by being in that job, that their level of fear, like perceived fear, that they should have a better bead on what's really life-threatening and what's not.
They do have a better bead. They're just on the hot seat, so they're making up a lie.
Okay.
When you're shooting women in cars, kids in parks,
yeah.
people with their back turned, there's so many instances of it.
Right.
I'm tired of looking at it years and years. There's so many instances of it. And hearing the same excuse about Amadou Diallo, I never forgot him in New York. This guy was shot 41 times for a cigarette lighter coming home from work. He had like 11 rounds in the bottom of his feet, which meant he was on his back.
And they were still shooting.
Two or three. I don't remember if it was two or three, but two or three of the cops reloaded. There's no excuse for that kind of stuff. And
so he's on the ground, probably already dead.
Yeah.
And they're reloading.
Right. Shooting him in the bottom of his feet. And this guy was walking home. He was walking up the steps going to his house after work. It's always a select few who make it bad for everybody.
How does that get... Oh, we're going to have to break for traffic in a minute, but okay. How does a situation like that get so out of hand? I mean, you know, not that it was right for the first person to take a shot because they thought something was wrong.
Because there's no consequences.
But how do you get so many people and so many bullets when you've already realized, like, that there was a mistake?
There's no consequences.
Oh.
Real simple.
Even if there were, or even, but even so, why are they shooting so many times? There's no reason. The person's already down.
Then they are nervous. Adrenaline.
Oh, then they're
adrenaline
just
adrenaline
like,
is heavy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Adrenaline and police officers were normally taught to double tap. People don't understand that whole line. I'll say this real quick. That whole line that we see in the movies and TVs: shoot somebody in the leg, to wing them, shoot them in the arm.
No. All right.
You don't do.
Ann Carrick in for Paul Pacelli. Bobby Ramos in the studio with us, and we've been talking about the police bias. You know, and when we went to the break there, you called it a double tap, which I was pretty sure I know what you meant, but just in case other people didn't know that. We were talking about, like, when police are trained to shoot somebody, that if they're, one, they shoot to kill.
Right.
And two, the double tap, meaning they're supposed to shoot them twice.
Right, exactly.
That's the training.
Exactly.
So that's normal. 16 shots when somebody's already laying on the ground,
right.
Not
right.
Normal.
You're supposed to, if you are shooting at somebody, you are supposed to shoot to kill, because you're only supposed to be shooting if your life or somebody else's life is in jeopardy.
Right.
So that's why you double tap.
If nobody's life is in jeopardy,
right.
You're supposed to find some other way, is
yeah.
the idea of, which is why no one should ever be shot in the back.
Right.
If they're running away, you should
exactly.
chase them, but you don't shoot them.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So we could go on for days
yes,
on end
yes,
about things that were done improperly. Let me ask you the more important question. You know, you said it's not the training.
Mm-mm.
What is it that would, in your opinion, would help to actually make some forward progress so that we could put an end to this?
First of all, I believe you have to fine-tune the people that you're hiring.
Like better screening of personalities things like that?
Yeah. I don't... Listen, and I'm not knocking any area, folks who are listening. I'm not knocking any area. But if you... I'd be leery if I'm hiring and I'm hiring some young person who's from the Valley or somewhere where there's not too many people of color.
Right.
I'm not looking to bring you into Bridgeport, Norwalk, Stanford, Stratford when the last person you saw was JJ on Good Times. And I'm giving you a badge and a gun.
Wow, JJ on Good Times. Okay.
I'm giving you a badge and a gun and expect you not to be nervous. Listen, one thing about the male psyche, when men get nervous, that's why I believe in women police officers a lot, because I was taught a long time ago, women are smarter than men, and that's been proved time and time again. But women use their minds much more than men do.
I always say by nature they have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can be in great shape and all this kind of stuff, but let's face it, you put a man next to me the same size, like height, build, whatever,
right.
they're gonna outpower me
right.
strength-wise.
Right.
And so I always say by nature, women have to be
quick on their feet.
Quicker, and what some people refer to sometimes as clever. Some people think it's deceptive, but I'm like, no, that we have to use that because that's where we have to use our strength. Because just to overpower somebody else, there's going to be situations where we just can't.
Right. Yeah. Whereas a guy is going to break his shoulder ramming into a door and
I'm
be out of work
bother.
For 8 months.
I'm gonna
She's
going to
figure out
way.
How to get on the other side of the door without breaking a
exactly.
nail. But anyway, now I got to give you a story. We had a big place. Town Fair was a big parking lot. And we had this guy. He was drunk. He looked like one of Oak Ridge boys. Big, heavy, 380-pound guy with the long beard. And he was drunk. And he wanted to fight. And there was like 7 or 8 of us cops. And we had him in a circle. And our dumb behinds are trying to figure out how we're going to get him down.
Right.
And we had a female officer who got there. And she was 4'10". And she came through. She pushed me out of the way. Move, 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 you guys. And she went up right to him. He was like the bull in the ring.
Right.
And she grabbed him, spun him around. You know better than put your hands behind her. And she handcuffed him. And I was like, Wanda, how'd you do that? Why did you do that?
Right.
She was right. She said, listen, his ego, his male ego, he wanted to fight some cops. Mano a mano. Yeah, I'm the man.
He's not going
to
fight a 4'10".
4'10" female. How's he going to look with the boys who are watching him?
You're right. Like, you're bullying this little tiny person.
All of us right there. She outthought all of us. So, women just think through things so much quicker.
Interesting. You know, I have not been a police officer, but I was an ambassador at a ski resort for years where you're kind of between ski patrol and customer service. We were the first people who arrived on any kind of scene that was an issue on the mountain with radios. We'd radio for whichever kind of help we needed kind of thing. And there were times where, I'd come across somebody twice my size, like you said, drunk, trying to get on a lift to end the day. It's like the last thing we want is for you to be at the top of the mountain.
But
I'm not going to wrestle you off the chair. So one time this guy got on, he goes to the top. I radio up like you have a problem on chair number or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they know. I get up there. He's lost a ski off the lift. He dropped a pole, something else. He's so drunk. He can't, he's like out of it.
Right.
And it's funny because without even thinking about it, I did sort of the same thing. I got up to him on skis and I said, look, I'm like, I'll get the ski. I'll get the pole. You get the sled and go to the bottom of the hill. And then I turned to two of the other bastards and I said, your job is to get that person into that sled over there. I'll see you at the bottom.
As soon as possible. That's it.
Right.
Yep.
And Carrick, and in studio with me, Bobby Ramos, we're talking about police bias. And, you started to say, you bring somebody from an area that's not very diverse and then you drop them into a town that is very diverse as an officer. That's not a good mix. Is that because they come with a bias they may not even realize they have? So it's it's not that they think, oh, I'm biased, I'm going to go after people of color. It's like they're just knee-jerk
it's
reaction.
Both ways. It's
they're
both
nervous
ways.
About it.
It's both ways. Some come with an unknown bias. Some come with that bias.
Right.
That's why so many guys who are big time racist have a history of going into the service. They want to go into the service so that they can learn how to handle weapons. They can learn how to fight.
They're training themselves.
They're training themselves, okay? We had that in our town with a guy who was the head of an organization. And the White Wolves, they were called. They were here in Milford.
Oh.
And, the service called on his background check, and they were told, listen, this guy. And he didn't get in, make a long story short. He didn't get in. But, yeah, they're known for going into the service for a stretch. So that they learn how to use weapons, all that.
I guess if you became a police officer, same thing. You'd learn a lot of those slightly different
skills,
same idea.
That's why when you watch these shows and see these groups out in the woods and fatigues and stuff, a lot of them have military training and they're training the others.
Right.
So, yeah, there's some implicit stuff there, too.
So you think the biggest thing that would help is somehow to be much better at screening people coming in.
Yeah.
To at least
and
make
also,
sure they're arriving with the right mindset.
Also, departments, to me, let's go straight to the chase, they need to hire more officers of color also and pair them with white officers. The ebony ivory thing, because people have a tendency to learn more when they see it on the daily basis, when they're riding in the car, having conversations with each other.
Well, you see what's normal, what's not normal about somebody
right.
who's different from
right.
you.
Right, because cops argue with each other, too.
Sure.
And you go on calls, and you don't like the way the officer handled this, or he or she handled that. You normally have discussions, especially when you're partners. The cities that still have partners, I think that's real key. That's one of the things that a lot of people don't know about the great coach Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi had no time for any racial stuff, period. It was a very secretive then, but he understood it because he had a brother who he loved who was gay. So he had no time for any kind of discrimination against anybody. Now, they're in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Right.
He brings in all of these black players. They can't find housing. Vince Lombardi, who was a god already, was calling realty companies, you will sell my player this house. You will do this. You will do that. He was also the first football coach to have black and white roommates. First one.
Purposely. To help them
right.
learn
more about each other and yeah. build team camaraderie. It was real important. That's why in all my discussions with people like Jim Brown and Deacon Jones, they knew that they're always back in the 60s, there always had to be an even number of black players on the team. If there were 15 black players on the team, they knew one of them was going to get cut because they could not room with whites, so there had to be an even number so they could room together.
Wow.
That was in the 60s.
Yeah.
So I think that would also work police-wise if you put people together.
So you pair them up as partners.
You pair them up. And the main thing is, when you know, if you and I are running an electrical company, and we have an electrician who stinks. He's about as good as Stevie Wonder would be as an electrician. He's terrible. What would we do for our liability? We'd have to let him go.
Right.
Him
You'd
or her
either
go.
Pair him up with somebody who can mentor him.
Electricians
or
are by themselves a lot.
Well, yeah, but
so,
I'm saying, but when somebody's not capable, you either pair them up with somebody who can mentor or you let them
all
go.
All of these yeah. avenues, and he or she is not working out. They're just a terrible electrician.
They're
You're
not
losing
able to
your
do
license.
The job.
You cut them.
Yeah.
Police departments. We know who the albatrosses are for the most part in our department. You
yeah.
know it. But we don't get rid of them. We try to hide them. And then when they mess up, then you got to defend them because you're trying to save a blank check going to a family from the city.
Right.
It's sad. So I would like to see pairings. And I would like to see, and to do that, you're going to have to hire more officers of color. You're going to have to. Because
did the statistics show that officers of color perform better in those situations where they don't?
Really?
I'm asking. I don't
Look
know.
Look on the news. How many times on the news do you see 3-4 black cops shot a 14-year-old white kid
well,
unarmed?
No,
or a white woman in a car right. unarmed.
My question was, did the statistics
when it happens,
show that
it's going to be major
that,
news?
Right. Did the statistics show that an officer of color is less likely to be shooting
Let me cut
a
you
suspect
off,
of
Look
color.
Look me
that,
in the
that
eye.
The
Look
question.
Me in the eye. I want you to
the
understand
The other way
something.
Around, I
you're
know it
talking
doesn't.
About police and law enforcement stuff, right? And they're all into stats. Do you know that most police departments do not keep stats on shootings
no.
within their department? That's nationally.
So
they
we don't know
not,
the answer to
bingo.
That.
Bingo. You know from the news, you know from everything you see happening around the country, police departments, they can tell you who ran a red light 6 times on a Monday night between 6 and 6:15. They can tell you that quick.
Right.
But they can't tell you how many people have been shot by their officers. And it's that would protect the officers as well.
Sure.
The good officers, it would protect them.
It would show that they haven't shot anybody.
Right.
Right.
Right. So the whole answer was supposed to be the whole body cam was supposed to be the end all to everything. Oh, just like I knew was going to happen. How
oh,
many are
the body
are
cam got
off?
Shut off.
I forgot to turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I accidentally hit it. It was off.
It fell
okay.
off. I turned it
okay.
off. I forgot to turn it
so,
on. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's.
Well, you're like, not going to leave the body camera on if you're doing something you're not supposed to be doing.
Hello.
Hello. I mean, you know.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
You're
like
going to turn
said,
it off and find
most,
some reason
most
why
officers
it's off.
Are yeah. good officers. There is a, like everywhere else in society. Like every other job in society, there's good and there's bad.
Yeah.
The one problem that police departments have is that they don't Nobody likes anybody who plays God. Nobody. Black, white, yellow, sure. Male, female. Police departments never say, our officer messed up. We know we got to give a check to the family. We can't allow this kind of stuff to happen. Whether it was the Rodney King
seems
stuff.
Seems like to me that would people, be so much better from a PR
would.
Standpoint.
It would.
Just say, even if the person, if it's the
We're
only
wrong.
Time they messed up, say,
right.
Look, you know what? We don't know what happened to him in the sense that, he's always been great and he messed up, but he messed up, and so we're going to make good on it and move on.
It gives you credibility.
Yeah.
But no, because they're always trying to avoid writing that check. They end up, he was in fear of his life and this and that. And he was raised on Wheaties.
And they probably spend as much money in the defense as they would if they just wrote the check.
Exactly.
All right. Ann Kerrigan with Bobby Ramos in studio. Talking about a very serious topic, but we seem to be having an awful lot of fun with it. I don't know what's wrong with that. But we're talking about police bias, but during the break we were talking about the fact that it's not, I mean, in a police setting it makes it worse and oftentimes fatal, but it's the same bias sometimes that just exists in society that people tense up. Like when, I was telling you the story about, where 15 black guys came out of a snack bar when I was in college, and it just threw me off guard. And, they weren't doing anything wrong. It just caught me off guard. But that same kind of tensing up, it overflows.
I understand that, because like I told you, if I saw 15 white guys, I tense up too.
That's right.
So I get it. I feel you.
That's right. Well, but that's a much harder problem to solve because, I'm not sure you'd call it racism, but it's still there. So there's that automatic kind of trigger fear that people can't even put a name to it necessarily.
For women, I get it. For women, women are like that, and they should be like that when it comes to 15 men. I don't care if they're black, white, yellow, green, and the woman's by herself.
Right.
Women always have to be on the defensive. But I give men no such pass.
So if I had been male and those same guys came out, I should not have been startled, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the folks that are to me showing their bias.
Okay, because I said to you, I would like to think if it was 15 white guys, I would have been equally as startled, at night walking across campus by myself and these 15.
It's a female thing.
By the way, it's a women's college. So to have 15 guys anywhere on campus together would have been unusual.
Right.
Just to clarify a little before we decide I'm a horrible person or something.
Yeah. Dialogue's the key, though.
So dialogue.
It's real important. Important. Police departments have a tendency not to be honest about when they dialogue. You can't be in any place where you have 300, 200 employees and unilaterally say, go up on camera and say, I know that none of my officers have any biases. When they do that, and I hear it all the time.
You know somebody does.
Come on,
that
stop
bigger
that.
Group, somebody
Come
has
on.
Some kind of bias.
Come on now.
Whether it's by skin color or they don't like vegetarians or something. They got some kind of bias.
Right, and once again, that's just not law enforcement. That's any field.
Sure.
That's any field. There's good and bad in any field. Whether you're talking about bankers, whether you're talking, let's not even get into politicians. Whether you're talking about priests, there's good and bad with everything.
Right. When it's law enforcement, though, it magnifies the problem because those are the people that we're depending on to keep peace and depending
and
on.
And you can take away people's freedoms and lives.
Right. And to help us in a bad situation, not create the bad situation, And so it makes it that it's like having medical people. If they were, treating people badly, those are the people you go to for help. You expect them to treat you fairly. It's like when you have doctors who are abusing patients, for example, it's the same kind of thing where those are the people you need to be able to trust. So if they're not trustworthy, it just makes it the same problem 10 times worse as opposed to just some person who's not trustworthy that you might be able to avoid in your life.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So we don't quite have that solved, but
no, not tonight, but maybe next time.
I am discouraged to hear that you sort of agree that we have not really made much progress on it, though.
No,
I was sort of hoping I was wrong.
No, you're right. You're right.
Do we at least talk about it more? Do you feel like we talk about dialogue? Do you feel like we at least shed a little more attention on it?
I think there's very little honest dialogue. I think there's more dialogue. And people are doing it for posterity's sake. People are doing it. Departments are doing it just for the image.
Yeah.
That they're concerned and that they're above board. There is very little honest dialogue.
Even when you have things like Black Lives Matter or something like, I mean, which is creating a different dialogue, not really helping?
Do things like Black Lives Matter? Yeah, they help. Yeah, they help. But the problem usually isn't the public. The problem usually isn't your listenership. The problem is the people who have the power. And in what we're talking about now, the people who have the power is law enforcement.
So it's the law enforcement with the bias who are in power.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen, people in power never concede their power without a fight. That's factual.
Yeah, but law enforcement is in power. We've given them the power. They don't have to wrestle it away from anybody. Right?
Yes. Yeah, we give it to them. It's very hard to take away, though, isn't it?
We're not asking to take away their power. We're just asking them to be fair.
Like I gave you the example of the poor electrician or the terrible mechanic who you would not let him work on your engine.
Where you just say this is not the right job for you.
Right. You shouldn't be in this. I know personally two police officers. One was in Fairfield. We grew up together. And another one was in Stratford. They were both guys. And they ended up leaving the job early in their careers because they said the job wasn't for them.
Now, so they realized it.
They realized it very early. And I watched as a lot of male officers talked behind their back and called them punks.
That gave them a hard time for leaving.
Yeah, talked behind their back. I respected them for it because I know that there's people on the job who shouldn't be here and they're still here. They stayed here and they're basically a waste of skin. Okay. I have more respect for somebody who gets in and say, I tried it. This isn't for me.
Yeah. I thought this was for me,
right.
But it's not. So I
respect those two guys a lot.
I agree with you. And I have Bobby Ramos in studio. You have something you want to announce and then we're going to try to grab the call, but tell us what you want to do.
Right. Martin Luther King Day is Monday, and there is an iconic Bridgeport police officer for 30 years, Ted Meekins. He's being honored with the Martin Luther King Leadership Award, Ted Meekins, and I'll be giving him the award at the state capitol. Governor Lamont will be there, Senator Blumenthal. Ted's had an amazing career. He's in a national, not local, he's in the National Black Police Hall of Fame. This is well-deserved. He's an icon in this area throughout the whole state. He's opened the door for women, people of color, on the police and fire department. So that'll be Monday. It's free. So come on down. Be at the state capitol, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and let's pick up that phone call really quickly. And what did you want to say? Because we've got about, 30 seconds.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. You know, I'd like to speak up for the police. It's all well and good to say that the police are biased, but what about the suspects that just refuse to listen to instructions? The one that stands out the most in my mind was a 12-year-old black boy with a gun in a park. I believe it was in Chicago area, but regardless, he was given the instruction to put the gun down. He instead decided to point the gun at the police officers and was promptly shot dead. The gun was a toy with all of the markings missing. Many, many cases, the suspects, the police aren't just shooting people at random.
All right, let's let him answer because we only have a couple seconds here.
Laura, I think you need to get cable and you're forgetting what I did for a living for 27 years. I'm not saying that there aren't cases where people deserve to be manhandled or even shot sometimes, but you're really talking out of school.